Thank you for listening to this Podcast One production. Now available on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, PodcastOne.com, and anywhere else you get your podcasts.
Welcome, you're tuned in to the best in paranormal talk radio. This is Darkness Radio. I'm your host, Dave Schrader. That guy over there, Tim Dennis. Hey, Tim.
Hey.
You know, we've got an exciting little show lined up today.
That's what I hear.
You know, yeah. We love when local kids do well.
Mm-hmm.
And we've got two little Minnesotan kids. I think they're like 13, 14 years old now.
No, they're much older than that.
We've been following their illustrious career for, what seems like forever, but it can only be a year or two since we had him on our show last when he was all of like 13 years old and doing these mock ghost adventure episodes on his YouTube channel. But now that he's grown up, he's like 14, 15 years old. He's out traveling with his sister. I think she's 11.
Much older than that.
I don't think much older, Tim. It's never good to say that about a lady. Listen, last year, big hit series hit Travel Channel. Besides the Holzer Files, that is, Tim. There was a program called Destination Fear that came in, kicked some butt, took some numbers, and did phenomenal. So good, they quickly got greenlit for a second season, which kicks off this Wednesday, April 29th, on the Travel Channel. Brother and sister duo Dakota Layden and Chelsea Layden head up the investigation, along with their best friend Tanner Wiseman and camera operator Alex Schroeder, confronting their fears once again as they pile back into their RV and hit the road on a nail-biting cross-country journey, pursuing paranormal evidence, Tim. Spending the night inside America's most haunted abandoned buildings. 6-hour-long episodes are coming our way, and hopefully the kids have somebody in control and of age that can drive the RV for them because they're so young.
They can do that, Dave. They're of age to do that.
They can't be, Tim. They were just children last time we had them on Darkness Radio like a decade ago. Weren't they only like, I don't know, 7, 8 years old at that point?
No, they weren't.
Feels like they were. No. Dakota, how old were you when you came in and sat in studio with Uncle Timmy and I and did Darkness Radio?
Honestly, I was probably like 15 or 16. Pretty young.
Yeah, see, just what, like 2 years ago, it seems like? My God.
2 years ago.
It flies
by. I'm 24 now.
Wow,
that's crazy.
24? And now you're nagging around your 11-year-old sister to be a part of the shenanigans? Aren't you worried about how young she is?
I freaking wish I was a little in here. Nah, she's the she's the
youngest. This road trip must have really aged us.
Yeah. Well, yeah. Now, we've had Dakota on before, and I know, Dakota, you visited with me, and I think it was Tanner over on Midnight in the Desert when I was hosting over there, and it's good to have you back officially under the Darkness Radio umbrella, so thank you guys for joining us and bringing Chelsea along with you this time. I mean, it's about time that she gets her due since you've been riding on her coattails for so long with your success. So,
yes.
It's great to have both of you on here. And, man, congratulations. Big congratulations for season two. Tim, give them the clap.
Thank you very much.
I don't give anybody the clap anymore, Dave. I've been told not to.
Oh, well, it's only polite, though. You guys, fellow Minnesotans. Yeah, there you go. Yeah, see? Fellow Minnesotans. So we got to back them up here. Dakota, you've been at this for a while, filming, having a lot of fun. You, like I said, we, I think, had you on when you were still just kind of doing your fun mock-you versions of Ghost Adventures, which actually opened up doors and led to you being a part of Ghost Adventures.
Yeah.
And now you've springboarded into the spotlight with this amazing new show, dragging along friends and family alike. Chelsea, were you excited to be a part of this program, or were you the reluctant hero in this whole story?
To be quite honest with you, it was a mix of feelings for sure. Prior to Destination Fear, Dakota, had his own like passion project, the Trail to Terror, which I was you know, part of that too. So I kind of knew what I was getting into, but, you know, a lot of things changed to make this road trip scarier. So it was one of those things where I was, you know, feeling blessed to have the opportunity, but also very, very nervous about it.
Well, Dakota, bringing a new series to light, obviously there's, you know, quite a bit going on in the world of paranormal and paranormal research, and investigating claims of ghostly hauntings. What did you want to do to, you know, for people, if this is the first time they're hearing about you, because they've been locked in a cave, trapped in a well by some psychopath only lowering buckets of lotion down, and this is their first time to hear about you. What is Destination Fear, and what did you want to bring to the market that was something that would be your stamp on it?
Yeah, I mean, Destination Fear, it all started with the documentary Trail to Terror, which was about 5 years ago now. It's the same concept, and I wanted to do something that kind of brought me back to what originally was my love for this, which was urban exploring mixed with the paranormal, going to these creepy abandoned buildings and hear these stories. And I also wanted to make a road trip out of it, because we, growing up, would always do these little mini road trips going to haunted abandoned buildings in the Minnesota area. So we wanted to do a road trip and bring my friends along, and that's pretty much what we created. It's a nonstop road trip where we don't go home until we're done. So we hit many locations tired. It's more of an experiment than it is an investigation. You know, we do go in with, we hear all the claims, we hear all the stories that people, experiences people have had in these locations, we hear the history. And when we go in, it's not as much of an investigation as it is, I'd say, an exploration. But we do put things to the test. We'll go to rooms where people had something paranormal happen to them. We'll bring gear. We'll try things out ourselves. But for the most part, it's an exploration and an experiment on fear. Every night we separate and sleep alone for over 4 hours at a time. It's more about, I'd say, the getting scared and having these experiences versus trying to like prove to people that ghosts are real.
Well, let me ask you then, Chelsea, what do you think in these cases? You know, having been a part of the paranormal world myself now for 14 years with the radio show and live events, I was surprised sometimes when we would do big events and you would think more paranormal activity would happen when you were alone. But sometimes when you were in, you know, groups of 5 or 10, strange things would occur. Do you see that there's any kind of swing for you and the team where it's when you're all together, you seem to have more activity, or is it the solo moments when things really light up?
You know, that's a really good question. But to be honest with you, it kind of is variable. I think that when you are more scared and when you have more fear, I think that elevates your own personal perception on what's going on. So I think when you're alone, your fear is heightened, which makes you, you know, maybe pick up on more things. But just the isolation in itself, I noticed that a lot more things happened when I was, you know, alone. Sleeping, you know, one of the parts about this show is that we, like Dakota said, we sleep alone. And, well, we try to sleep alone. Let me clarify that. but then again, sometimes we're in groups and, you know, your guards are down a little bit because you have this kind of these moments where you're isolated and you're super, super scared. And then you have these moments where you feel like this false sense of comfort with other people. Sometimes when your guards are down, you also experience things for whatever reason. So I don't really have a clear cut answer, but that's kind of what I've experienced.
And for you, Dakota, I mean, sometimes the synergy of being in a group, right? When you have three or four of you and you're in an area and there's high nerves and high tension, do you notice that will amp up a location, or do you feel that sometimes that chaotic fear and energy might actually negatively impact a haunting, causing it to almost like the spirits step back watching you, wondering what the hell's going on with this group of flesh bags that are in the building?
Yeah, I mean, I totally would have to agree with Chelsea on that, where it's like we'll walk into a building and there are times where when we're in a group setting, it seems like it's more active than when we're alone. And I think that's just because some spirits, they don't like crowds, just like some people don't like crowds. So I do feel that there are times as a group at locations where we're getting much more activity. Whatever's there doesn't care that how many people are there. But then there are other times where we'll have an interesting night. Nothing maybe too crazy has happened yet. Some interesting things. And we'll separate to go to bed. And then that's when whatever's there really decides to show itself on a much more personal level to one of us or all of us. But yeah, it's kind of the way I've thought of it is, you know, we're in the building for most of the night until the last 4 to 5 hours. And whatever's there, if it's been watching us and following us, it now has the opportunity to pick on one of us when we're all alone. And sometimes that happens. But yeah, it's different. Every location is definitely different.
Do you notice going into these locations, kind of making yourself accessible this way, that there is one of you that the energy seems to center around perhaps more often?
Definitely. Honestly, per location. Yeah. 100% actually. I mean, Chelsea, so that's when this season, it wasn't just me picking the location. So last road trip, I picked all 10. No one knew where they were going, and I was the only one who knew. This time, Chelsea and Tanner, they both got to pick a location, and they didn't tell me where they were picking, so I didn't know where they were picking, and they didn't know the locations I was picking. And I will say, like, Chelsea, your episode, your location, the hospital, I feel like it was messing with you that whole night. Like, most of the night, it was wherever you were.
I know. It was, like, my one opportunity to, like, make things scary for you, and I feel like it ended up backfiring a little bit.
It definitely backfired.
Is there aspects of the investigation, though, that you know, you start to realize, hey, you know, whenever Chelsea's in the room, things are a little bit more active, or maybe Tanner, you know, is there any aspect of that or no? Does it all just seem to, you know, kind of round robin and, you know, at different episodes, different times, each one of you end up becoming kind of the focal point?
Yeah, I mean, the hard part is we're on the road for so long. We're going to so many places and the nights kind of start to blend. So, like, once one person has a bad night, it kind of takes a while for that to go away. So even though I felt like I was getting picked on the most at the last location and it was really messing with me, when I go into the next night, I'm really still thinking about that, and I think it's still messing with me. It's definitely a mental head game. But there has been several times where we've been like, yep, it's messing with you, Tanner, or yep, it's messing with you, Chelsea. It's not even going near us. Like, let's keep playing with this, see what happens when we keep Chelsea in the room or keep Tanner in the room.
You know, that's the interesting part about this, though. Like, you can prepare, like, mentally, physically for these types of things as much as you want, but realistically, you don't really know what's going to happen to you when you walk through the doors of each building. You could have a night where nothing, hardly anything happens to you at all, or you can have a night where it's just, like, absolute hell.
Mm-hmm.
Do you ever think that, I mean, especially when you're putting yourself from one location to the next location to the next location, is there ever this residue of the previous location that you've maybe taken with you? The specter of one location suddenly mm-hmm. seems to still be with you at location number two. Has that happened?
Yeah. I mean, so we've thought about it before. Like, it's definitely a real concern because people go to one location and then they go home and they take something home with them from only going to one. So we're going to, like, many. And we have had nights, unfortunately, like, it doesn't make the cut most of the time, like, unless, like, we're 100% solid. But because these episodes air once as a normal run, but then later on they'll air, like, you know, out of order, we didn't want to say we've seen too much the last night. But there have been so many nights, especially this six, there was one night four out of six, that we were, like, so perplexed because we had something so dark happen in an area that wasn't supposed to be that dark. One of us actually went to, like, the hospital that night, and that was what was running through our heads was, is this something we took with us? Because some of the, like, the last location was really dark, the location before that was really dark, and this one's not supposed to be this dark. And yeah, like, it's something that runs through our heads all the time. And then when we go home from this trip, it's still with you for at least a month or two.
Yeah, even if it's not like there were paranormal, which it can it can be. I feel like it's also like mentally you're carrying these different locations to the next one. Like you're not totally over what happened. Like it's not like normal what we're doing. So like just recovering from each location doesn't happen overnight. And just like you said, Dave, like you do carry it over to the next one and the next one. It does become kind of like a snowball effect of just kind of heaviness, to be honest.
Does it ever give you guys the sense of, and I mean in the most minor version of it, but like a PTSD where you've immersed yourself, you know, for 10 episodes, one location after another, six episodes this season, one location after another. Do you ever get home and almost feel, I don't want to say under attack, but feel on edge and off balance because of all of the spiritual activity, the energy, the whatever you want to call it, that you've put yourself through mentally, physically, and emotionally during that run?
I would totally use the word unbalanced. Going through each location every other day or so, and just carrying all that like high strung energy and emotion, and just kind of like fight or flight, like your body's never fully resting. And I personally when I came home, like everything was like set me off in some kind of way, not necessarily like anger, but just like I was scared of like any loud noise, or someone would just come up to me really quick, and that, you know, I have that extra, you know, reaction to it. So absolutely, it's ingrained in you when you have experiences for a long period of time. It becomes kind of your norm. And, you know, even with dreams and stuff, like I close my eyes and like you have these dreams of these locations because that's what you immersed yourself in. How about you, Dakota?
Mm-hmm. I mean, I'm very similar. When I came back from this trip, luckily I haven't felt like I've taken anything back with me that I couldn't get rid of right away. Nothing has happened at the house, but there were so many nights where I'd be laying in my real bed, not some sleeping like bag on the ground. And I would hear, like, I live with Tanner and Alex, so like I'd hear one of them getting up late at night to go grab something, but I'd shoot out of bed, like, because I'm so trained to be hearing these noises around me while I'm sleeping. And nightmares happened a lot. I had a lot of nightmares this time around about just like my nightmares are always like two or three nights blended into one. Like, it's like I'm in Penhurst right now, but then the end of the dream, I'm at a different sanatorium, but it's all just one thing. I don't know. It's so creepy, but it usually takes about a month, I feel like, for me to really stop and just get over it and move on.
Do you have concerns then, Dakota, for yourself, for the long-term effect of immersing yourself, especially at this young of an age, into these volatile atmospheres and locations?
Totally. I mean, 100%. We're dealing with, for me, the hardest part is dark stuff, demonic stuff, where, you know, we go to places where there's rituals or satanic type stuff. That really freaks me out. I feel like that stuff can have a long-term effect on you, and I definitely am concerned about it. If it ever got to the point where myself, Tanner, Alex, or Chelsea wasn't doing good, I would not hesitate to stop or to prolong maybe doing it again, or just stop altogether. If it really got to that point where, I mean, we're lucky we're such a family, us four, and we know each other so well that if one minor thing is off that day, we can tell. So if it ever got to that point, though, where darkness, it wasn't fun anymore, we weren't, like, enjoying it, and it was just really a burden, then, yeah, I think we would have to stop. And it could get to that point.
What about you, Chelsea? I mean, obviously, you've got a lot of passions as well. I mean, you're going to school, you've played hockey, or, you know, a big involvement in that. And then having this aspect, do you ever worry it's going to bleed over into your real life, into the things that you want to do as you carry on going forward?
Absolutely. That was actually one of the main concerns I had when agreeing to, take part in this show. My priorities are getting through school and most importantly, taking care of my patients, but that I'm seeing at school. And I even told Dakota and I told everyone, like, as soon as I start to realize if any of that's compromised, you know, then I went too far. So we just try to plan these trips where, you know, I have a period of time where I can acclimate back into, like, transition back into seeing patients and my school, because that was definitely my priority. And that's something to seriously consider. You know, it's, although this is a hobby and I love, absolutely love doing this with them, it's also important to keep your life in balance outside of the show, as I'm sure you've experienced yourself being on a show too. Like, you have family, you have, you know, all these other aspects that you have to keep in check, while also doing the show, which we're so, like, blessed to be able to do. But it's a good point.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I had to get comfortable with the fact that once I sold Tim's soul to get where I am, I've become.
Yeah, you what?
Oh, never mind, Tim.
Oh,
never mind. Okay. Not important at all. What about relationships? Does this affect or impact personal, friend, romantic relationships? And I know this is, you know, very personal, and you certainly don't have mm-hmm. to answer if you don't want to. We could just make it up and post afterwards and pretend that we're you and answer these questions later. So it'd be better if you just told us now. But no, mm-hmm. seriously, does it ever impact or affect relationships that way?
Honestly, yes, I mean, that's such a good point. You can go closer.
You wanna, well, I was just going to say, it's like relationships. I mean, you're talking to the wrong guy. I haven't had a relationship in so long. Like, that's not even the paranormal stuff. That's just my work ethic. I just like to work too much. But relationships, like with friendships, yeah. It definitely does. Like, I'm so lucky I have some core friends that I live with here in Vegas, people that have been friends with my whole life. But yeah, in a weird way, getting a show and people seeing that it's only paranormal and people who maybe, I don't know, it's definitely hurt some friendships, that's for sure.
Yeah, I just okay feel like, me. Yeah, like you're allocating a lot of time to, you know, you're doing a lot more than just being on the show. I don't know if people are aware, but you're also helping edit the show. You're very busy. You're busy every day. There's not a lot of time. Someone right now, I just don't feel like it would be like fair to that person, even if you could, even if you were to find somebody right now. So that's, you know, from your end, that's totally true. From my end of the spectrum, like, honestly, taking this show, like, I also don't have a ton of time, but I'm lucky enough to be dating someone who goes to school with me, so we're in the similar boat that way. But I had to sit down with him and I just talked him through it. I was like, this is what I'm going to be doing. You know, I'm going to be on the road a lot. And it, any time that you have a moment where you're taking that much time and energy, like, energy is totally part of it. These things wipe me out. It does take a lot. And, you know, my friends and boyfriends, they helped me so much get back on my feet with school too. Like, they're my biggest supporters, and you definitely need that. When you're doing something like that, and I'm so thankful.
Hey, it's your guy Timmy again. What kind of week have you had? You know what? The weather's changing. We're getting a little warmer with spring, yet winter doesn't want to give it up. You know what that meant for me? It was kind of an up and down pain week, and a little bit of anxiety I get with that pain kind of hit me a little bit this week too. So there was some stress as well. But you know what? I got it under control. It's all right, because I've got feels. Have you tried it yet? I got to ask you that question. Did you jump on board this week? Because if you didn't, well, you still got a little time. I still want you to hop on board. I want you to try feels. If you're experiencing stress, or you have anxiety, or you have chronic pain, or even you have trouble sleeping at least once a week, you're not alone. A lot of us do personally. I've been telling you about my chronic pain. I'll recap it real quick for those of you who aren't familiar. Everything hurts. How's that sound? Everything hurts. Everything but this little tip of my little pinky on my left hand basically is in pain. I've got real bad arthritis all over my body. I've torn ligaments and tendons, 13 herniated discs, Charcot foot. Look it up. It's very French and very rare. It's spelled char as in charcoal and cot, like a thing you lay on. And don't eat before you look it up, by the way. It's extremely, it'll make you throw up. But I got a lot of stuff going on. Yeah. And a lot of pain before that. kicked Vicodin and been cycling myself off of opioids. I've been on them for a long time, but I needed something to take the edge off the pain. Because I'll tell you, I can't sit in a chair for more than an hour. I can't sleep for more than an hour and a half. So you say to yourself, well, Tim, what do you do? What do you do to deal with that pain? I'm in excruciating pain all the time. There's not an area of my body, like I said, except for the tip of my little finger, that doesn't hurt all the time. So what do I do? What do I do to deal with it? Well, I use premium CBD from Feels. Now I get a lot of emails and a lot of messages on different messengers and stuff that, well, Tim, does it, come on, you're just, it's just bunk, right? You're not really using Feels, are you? I am. I'm really using Feels. And it's really helping me. I'm really, really having good results with Feels. Feels is premium CBD and it's delivered directly to your doorstep. It comes directly to my doorstep. It's great. I get it every month. Feels naturally helps reduce stress, anxiety, pain, and sleeplessness. And with my conditions, multiple conditions, Feels is a miracle. It's a godsend. I use a whole dropper's full because I have quite the tolerance. Take a whole dropper's full, put it under my tongue, and within minutes, that pain just melts away. It's so nice. Now, you're going to differ depending on your pain tolerance and your tolerance in general, but you'll feel that difference within minutes. The thing to remember about CBD is that, you know, finding your dose is going to differ. You may only need a few drops. You may need half a dropper full. You may need a whole dropper full. You never know. But again, leave some room to experiment over the course of a week or so. You may need to take more or less depending on to get that effect that you're after in order to get some relief from that pain. If you don't know how much you need or what to do or you have those questions, the great thing is that Feels offers a free CBD hotline to help you guide you on your experience, your own personal experience. And Feels is so supportive. These guys over at Feels are amazing when it comes to the questions you have. They're right there and they'll walk you through the entire experience. You're never alone with Feels. Feel better naturally. This is all natural, folks. This isn't going to get you all wonky or high like the prescription pills or medications that you're taking for your pain right now. Feels works naturally to help you feel better. There's no high, there's no hangover, no addiction, nothing like that. Join the Feels community right now. Get Feels delivered to your door every single month. You'll save money on every order, and you can pause or cancel at any time. There's no obligation. Although, once you've tried premium CBD from Feels, I don't know why you'd want to stop. Why would you do that? If you're getting the relief from your anxiety, from your pain, I don't know why you'd want to. I can't imagine why you'd want to stop. But if you do want to stop, hey, you can pause or cancel at any time. Feels has me feeling my best every day, and it can help you too. Become a member today by going to feels.com/darkness, and you'll get 50% off your first order with free shipping. That's Feels, FEALS.com/darkness to become a member and get 50% automatically taken off your first order with free shipping. One more time, do yourself a favor. If you've got stress, if you've got anxiety, chronic pain, if you're having trouble sleeping, do yourself a favor. Get that out of your life right now. Try Feels. Take 50% off your first order with free shipping. Go to feels.com/darkness. Do it today.
Again, Destination Fear launches this week on Travel Channel. Make sure that you set your recorders, your DVRs. Go back to it. Watch it. Catch up on the first season if you haven't already seen it. And but definitely cue in Wednesday, April 29th, 10 p.m. Eastern, 9 and Pacific. It'll be on 9 p.m. Central. You can look for local times and such in your areas. You know, one aspect of what you do that I find really interesting is you're in these environments. you investigate. With the Holzer files, we get to go in, we investigate, we interview people, we do the baseline, we leave. We continue interviewing, getting a feel and an understanding, going through the experiences that have happened there. We go in for the investigation, we leave. You immerse yourself in this location for a long period of time, putting yourself in there, doing this, and then sleeping. How does it impact your sleep while you're there? Does the paranormal bleed into that realm? And have you ever had encounters where you feel the paranormal made themselves available to you during that sleep cycle, as opposed to physically showing up, something that you could put on camera? I mean, does that make sense? On camera, something mm-hmm. moves, you capture, you hear something, you can respond to it. Dreams, obviously you can't portray it on the screen, but I've got to guess, since so many ghost stories and visitations are known to take place in the dream state, is there ever anything we haven't seen on the episodes, past or upcoming, that because there's no way to convey it, but you have been affected yeah. by the paranormal in that sleep pattern? We'll start with you, Dakota.
Yeah, 100%. I mean, one thing is, you say we're sleeping alone, it's 4 to 5 hours every night. And I will say probably 99% of the time, no one actually like gets real sleep. We shut our eyes, we try to sleep, but you're just so concerned about what's surrounding you that you rarely actually ever can go into like that REM sleep. But I have had a few times, and it's been cut out of the show completely because, like you said, it's impossible to get this across on the screen. But there were many times where I would be like laying down in my sleeping arrangement, turn my flashlight off, I've had my eyes shut now for 10 to 20 minutes, not sleeping, but getting to that point where I'm relaxing, just trying to just take myself out of the environment. And I've had so many times where I've like seen something in my head, like a nurse just like standing over me, or a patient walking down the hall. And I can like see it in my head. I don't know if that's me freaking myself out, but it's happened several times, and I can't like just turn to the camera and be like, I just saw a nurse in my head. Like, people be like, what? So there are definitely times where maybe, like you said, if something is trying to come through and I just wasn't allowing it, or I got too scared to really fully let it convey a message.
Well, yeah, I'm curious about that. I mean, here you are, you're there. You said this is a living experiment for you. If you're mm-hmm. you're engaging sight, sound, mind, why not stop and say that? I understand for TV, oh, okay, great. Mm-hmm. Dakota's hallucinating, right? It's going to seem like that. But if you,
right.
if you're getting a visualization of a nurse and you begin running recorders right then, or you break out your equipment and you're able to corroborate mm-hmm. the mental image that you're picking up, the psychic eye image with that, why not call that out? Why not allow yourself to start to hone that skill as well?
Yeah.
I love that yeah. idea, though. Like, we're still so new to this, and, you know, there's, like, you, like, are someone we look up to, and we have a lot of learning to do. And I think by being in the entertainment business, I think one of the most important parts is to really try your best to capture that moment and to project it so everyone knows exactly how you're feeling. And that's something that, you know, I personally am working on too. But there are tons of times where that happens. And mm-hmm. It seems weird to like talk about it. But at the same time, like you said, Dave, that's what makes it so like real, are these real moments that you're experiencing, and to try to convey it to the viewer.
Mm-hmm.
Now, Chelsea,
awesome. Let me
check real quickly, and checking with you, Chelsea, how about the dream aspect? Do you ever feel influenced while in the location in your dreams by aspects of the paranormal?
I could say the same thing that Dakota did, where you close your eyes and you're seeing things, but it's again in your sleep. But a lot of it is really relevant to the location that you're staying at. In addition to that, like, you also question yourself, like, am I hallucinating? Am I just really tired? I've even had a moment in the second season where I was actually seeing things while I was laying down with my eyes open. But I even messed like walkie Dakota. I'm like, Dakota, you're going to think I'm crazy, but I'm really seeing this right now. And it's uncomfortable yeah. for me still, because I'm not used to like letting the world like in on my experiences. I'm still warming up to that, but totally happens.
I mean, you said that night you walkied me and Tanner and told us that you were seeing these white mists with your own eyes. You're like, I'm not seeing things. And you're an eye doctor, so you would know if you're like doing things with your eyes and trying to adjust to the light or whatever. We watched back the footage and there were like these white clouds of mist in your room right when you said you were seeing them. And I have no idea how to explain that. I'm just glad you were, like you said it too, and that you walkied us to let us know you had seen it, because it was there.
That's, you know, that's a great point. Chelsea, being involved in ophthalmology and understanding the eye, that's something that I'm always cautious of when we're in investigations, especially when we're using flashlights for quick checking something and turning it off. Your eyes are constantly adjusting in low light settings, looking, you know, the aperture is changing, trying to soak in what little light there is, see things. How much of what you see in the dark, in all honesty, do you think we have to discount? Because there are times I have seen an entire shadow cover a door and then it's gone and I can see that light and I'm thinking, that can't be real. My eyes must just be adjusting and doing this. But that doorway was so clear and now it's completely blacked out. How do we start to differentiate between the true physiological aspects of what we're experiencing as opposed to our perceived aspects of what we may have just seen?
You know, that's a really good point to bring up, and it's something I am constantly thinking about. And honestly, it sometimes gets in the way of me verbalizing what I'm witnessing and seeing, because, you know, in my mind, I'm always like, okay, that was just my eyes, because, you know, there are adaption periods of your eyes where, you know, it takes your eyes time during when from different lighting. Like you're looking at a flashlight and then you're looking in pitch black. It is a constant adjustment of your eyes. But, you know, things should only be getting brighter the longer you're in darkness. So if I'm in darkness and my eyes are adjusting and I see something darker, you know, usually that's an indication that's not your eyes.
See, that's great insight. I hadn't even thought of that concept. But you're right. Your eyes would become adjusted, so you shouldn't be seeing darker. You should begin seeing things in a much brighter way. Unless something is altering the light or the spectrum that's right in front of you.
Right. Totally.
Very cool. Fascinating stuff. Speaking of fascinating, folks, don't miss out on the return of Destination Fear. The Haunted Road Trip continues Wednesday, April 29th at 10 p.m. 6 brand new episodes. We have two of the leads of the show with us. Dakota and Chelsea Layden will be right back. And we're going to continue talking about some of the locations they visited, some that we have to look forward to in the new season, including one right here in our own backyard at the Nopaping Sanitarium in Minnesota. We'll do that when we return to the best in paranormal talk radio. This is Darkness Radio.
You know, we all need a break now and then, so why not keep your brain active while you relax? Especially in these times when it seems like we're all sitting around looking at the walls. Might as well keep your brain engaged and keep it busy. You know, the way I do it these days is by playing Best Fiends. It is an absolutely fun, engaging, addicting game that I play right there on my mobile device. And I'm telling you, it is absolutely amazing. The experience I've had with Best Fiends, I can only describe in one word: awe-inspiring. Well, I don't know if that's the word I want to use, but sure, I could say it's awe-inspiring. I'll tell you, it involves puzzles. It involves these cute little characters that help you along this journey. And you also have to get rid of slugs. I know that may sound confusing. It may sound like maybe I've been dipping into the old pain meds a little bit too much. But follow me here. Get it for yourself. Get it for yourself. You download it at the Apple App Store or Google Play, and you download it for free. And I'm telling you, it'll be more fun than you can shake a stick at. And you can play along with Dave and I. You can also play along with your friends on social media. I'm telling you, it's more fun than you could ever possibly imagine. Now, I always thought to myself, you know, being kind of self-quarantined at home that my brain was just going to turn to mush, but it hasn't. I've been playing Best Fiends. My skills have been getting sharper. My hand-eye coordination's been getting sharper. My problem-solving skills have been getting sharper. Everything about me has been getting sharper, playing Best Fiends. I've been seeing patterns differently and problem-solving quicker. It's amazing what things have been changing as I've been playing Best Fiends. It's really, really cool. I don't know how else to tell you other than get into this game and follow along with us, both Dave and I, as we play Best Fiends. You'll find out for yourself. Best Fiends, as I've been telling you, is a unique and exciting puzzle experience unlike any other puzzle games out there. You just have to play it yourself to find out. Best Fiends updates this game monthly, so I'll tell you, it never gets old. It never gets old. You always have new levels and new events every month. Best Fiends is always throwing different new things at you, so you never are just kind of sitting there going, oh, I've done this before. Never. You always have new challenges thrown at you, and I'm telling you, it is something special. One of the great things about Best Fiends is it doesn't require the internet to play, so you don't need to worry about Wi-Fi access or using cell data. You don't need to worry about hooking up to an external network to play Best Fiends. You can just go ahead and play along, and then if you want to hook up with your friends later on an external network, you can, and then get together and play along with others or network with others later on if you wish. So if you want to play while you're on the road, or if you want to play in a place that has bad reception, you can do that as well. It's really convenient. You got to try it. Along the way, as you're playing Best Fiends, you collect tons of different characters, which is really, really cool. And these different characters have different abilities, they have different power levels, and you power them up and level them up along the way. Each character has something different that it brings to the game and also helps you as well. So it's, again, it's one of these special games that has different attributes, different themes, different characters, and it really keeps you involved in the game. Best Fiends has thousands of levels already, with new levels, events, and characters added every month. It's hours of fun right at your fingertips, and you can even play offline. With over 100 million downloads and tons of 5-star reviews, Best Fiends is a must play. You can download Best Fiends for free right now on the Apple App Store or at Google Play. That's friends without the R. That's Best Fiends.
Destination Fear is a fantastic series. If you haven't had a chance to watch it, check out the first 10 episodes that aired last season. The brand new 6 episodes begin airing this Wednesday, April 29th, 10 p.m. Eastern and Pacific time, 9 p.m. Central. Check local listings and times in your areas for that. And please do me a favor, folks, with shows like this, I know you tune into our show and you watch shows like this because you are fascinated with the supernatural and the paranormal. You want more great programming, especially out-of-the-box programming like Destination Fear. When the show airs, if you cannot watch it live, watch it within the first 2 or 3 days you've recorded it so that it actually counts towards the ratings. By doing that, you can assure that there will be more seasons of all of your favorite TV shows. So try to watch those episodes immediately within the first 2 to 3 days of airing. All right, Dakota, Chelsea, let's talk last season. What are some of the standout locations? And I want to hear your top, let's say, 3 for each one of you. Dakota, last season, what really stood out as the top 3 locations that you guys had a chance to experiment and experience?
Yeah, I think for me, my top 3 would be Sweet Spring Sanatorium in West Virginia. We had an experience there I will never forget. We don't know yet if it was someone breaking into the building, an actual outsider coming in and freaking us out, or if we were hearing dead-on spirits yelling and talking. It sounded like it was like 15 feet away from us. We got it on camera, but there was no one there. We did searches of the whole property. We found no one. It was one of our scarier experiences because it brought down a whole new level of fear. Like, it's either something paranormal, which is terrifying, or it's something human, which might even be more terrifying. There might be someone in the building with us.
See, I give you a lot of credit. Scary. Doing our show, obviously, when we get locked in, we are there alone. It's us. We've got our camera guy and sound guy with us, and that's it. But, you know, outside the perimeter, we keep it as clean as we can. We keep people, you know, a couple of the people keeping an eye on the outside so nobody does approach or try to get into the buildings that we're into, creating false positives. You guys are really kind of out there on your own. That's got to be kind of a mind screw as well.
It really is. And that was like the first location that really we realized how crazy this could get. And there were a few stops after that one that we had people, like a police officer at the front of the driveway leading up to one of the hospitals, because it was so notoriously explored by urban explorers all the time. So that we took some precautions after that one. I would say my second would be, oh my gosh, there's so many good ones, but I think Moundsville Penitentiary was really fascinating to me. I had marks show up on my back that I had never really experienced. It wasn't allergies. It wasn't me bumping into something. It was looked like lashings or something on my back. And then Fairfield County Infirmary, I think, blew me away. It was our ninth stop last trip. It's a small infirmary. It was the smallest location on the trip. I was totally not expecting it to be a crazy big night. I thought because it was the smallest, it'd be maybe the easiest because we were all going to be closer. And no, it was probably our hardest, most challenging night with movement. We caught a door moving, could have been the way of the land, cause people have reported so many doors moving in that location. And it is at like a weird shift of the balance, but freaked us out. And we were not the same after that night.
All right, so you've got these locations, you're having different experiences that really kind of impact you and influence what you're doing. Out of the locations that you visited in first season, and Chelsea, I'm going to still get to you in a minute here, but Dakota, are there any that you think there is no flipping way you could get me to go back ever to this location? Is there any one of them from last season that stand out to you that way?
I would say Sweet Spring Sanatorium. I'm close to that level where the dark side of me wants to go back because I just want to experience it again, and I want to like beat that place, Sweet Spring Sanatorium. I feel like that place really beat us. We didn't leave that night feeling like winners at all. So that would be the one that I'd say would be the most challenging to go back, because when we left, I felt it was the best I've ever felt leaving a location. Like, just get me the heck away from here. So that would be a really, really tough one to want to go back to.
That's all right, Chelsea. Let's start with your list, Chelsea. Top three locations from last season that really just kind of stood out to you, and why?
Well, two of my three were the same as Dakota, but for one, Sweet Spring Sanitarium, because by far and away, like, that was just a whole nother level of, like, if that was paranormal, like, that was the craziest night of my life. Like, not even kidding. I remember when we didn't end up finishing that night. Like, we, you know, really tried to, you know, come together and finish the night off by sleeping alone, but it ended up not even happening. So I do feel like Dakota was right when he said that. Like, it's kind of a mix of, like, we feel like we didn't actually make it through. So there's a part of me that wants to just successfully check it off the list, but at the same time, like, after all that happened and they had to go back in and get the cameras, I wouldn't even go back in to get the cameras. So it just shows like how big of an impact that location had on on us in general. So I'd say that's hands down the scariest one. The second most scariest for me was the Statler Hotel in Buffalo. Because it was just so big. It was the biggest location I've ever been to. And I kind of drew the short straw by having to sleep on the highest floor in the whole hotel. So that was pretty freaky, and it tested me beyond comfort for sure. But it was just a really interesting place. So like, I'd still go back to that one if we were given the opportunity to, because it was such a unique place. And the third one I said was Fairfield too, just with that door opening. I've never really seen, you know, or had someone firsthand like see something like that visual. So that definitely scared me too.
Now, Dakota, you've had a chance to visit many locations through the years. Is there one location you've ever been to where you can really say, Dave, this place should just be knocked down and burned from existence. It is too dark, too scary, and something evil walks that hall.
Yeah, I think there's a few that stand out in my head that would really go there. I don't know if I would say burn down, though, just because I love these buildings. Whenever I hear about like a
right, and obviously, I'm not advocating for people to burn these places. I'm just, like you know, because we've all had a couple of those places we've encountered where I just think this totally. Place should be removed from the planet Earth. It is too creepy, and I don't think this is safe for anybody to go into.
I think of this season, the locations we went to, there's a location called Hillview Manor in Pennsylvania, and I don't know why, but every time I've gone there, I've been there twice now, every time I go there, I have something so unexpected happen, and it's never what you would expect. Like this time around, one of our crew members, Alex, he was super affected. It was the worst I've ever seen. Out of nowhere, too. There's not really supposed to be anything evil there, and we had such an evil encounter. And then we went to a location called the Sheboygan Falls Asylum in Wisconsin, which this is actually our sixth episode of the new season. And it was so terrifying, so creepy. It was a never-before-seen asylum. We could only talk to, doing the research, there's only one paranormal group who was allowed inside so far. And it was a local Wisconsin group. So that was all, like, usually when we go to a building, we have all these stories and all these claims to go off of, but this is the first time we only had one group who had been in there, and then we were the first to actually go spend an entire night and document it for TV. And it was just so much scarier that night. We had some creepy encounters. I'm not going to say what, because it'll totally ruin the episode, but that might be a location I would say maybe you just get rid of. Hillview Manor, and then probably Sweet Springs Sanatorium. Still.
All right. Yeah, it is weird, right? There are some places that just impress upon you such an aspect of fear. You know, Mansfield Reformatory, the Ohio State Reformatory. Sound familiar to you guys? Are you familiar with that location at all? Yeah,
I've thought definitely heard familiar. Of it.
that place to me, it has two sides. It feels, you know, there's one part of that building to me that I feel like they could just nuke off the planet and the planet would be better for it not being there. The other side, certainly active, but doesn't have that same dense propensity for just darkness and creepy crawly vibes. I don't know how else to explain it, but that was one of those. And I love it. I love Mansfield. It's an amazing location, but it is truly interesting to me standing in there how the two sides of the building feel like two totally different universes. I don't know how Steven place it.
That's honestly like such a good point, because I feel like when we talk about these buildings, we talk about them as a whole and we talk about their story as in like the whole building, but really it's so true when you say like the building itself has so many different parts that can just show itself in totally different ways.
Now, Nopaming. I was lucky enough when I was working behind the scenes on Ghost Adventures. You know, Zach, he said, Dave, let's go to Minnesota again. I you know, we did Palmer House. What else have you got there, man? And I'm like, you know, we're Minnesota. We don't have insane asylums. And I start laughing and then realize just how many of these buildings there were here at one point. And of course, in Anoka, the Anoka State Hospital, everybody's always wanted to get in there. And I am constantly told these terrifying stories of the tunnels beneath the buildings. And we, of course, just could never get access. And then somebody pointed out, Dave, have you ever heard of Nopaming up by Duluth? I'm like, no, or Nopaming. And I said, no, what is it? And I started doing a little research. I found a team that had urban explored and broken into it a few times and did some investigating. And then we reached out and actually able to communicate with the people that ran it. And at first, I know they were reluctant. And I said, listen, you're trying to save this building. And I believe it's a Kirkbride building, isn't it?
Yes.
Right. So it's one of the rare Kirkbride buildings. It's beautiful, you know, the history of it. And I talked them into allowing us to go in there. And I know Ghost Adventures was deeply affected by that location. You launch there for season two. That's your first episode, am I right?
Yep, that's the first stop.
Had you had a chance to be there before, or was this your first encounter?
So we had all dreamed of going there when we were younger. Once Ghost Adventures has been there and it became a place, like, we were like, oh, we have to go there. But we never could because we didn't have access to, like, we didn't know the owner or anything. So when I was in Duluth with my buddy Alex, who's on the show now with us, like a few years ago, and then Tanner came up to visit us, we went onto the property of Nuphemming. We didn't have permission, so that was wrong, but we didn't go in. We just did a perimeter of the whole building. We walked it's massive. Like, people don't even realize how big it is.
Right.
It's in the woods. It's so creepy. And even so, we did this perimeter walk and we wanted to go inside, but we literally didn't even build up the courage to. We were so scared after walking just the property. It was starting to get dark and we were like, let's just go. Like, this is freaky. And so we left and we had never came back since doing now season two. We were finally allowed inside to spend a full night. And it was the middle of winter, so the hallways were 4 inches thick in ice. And it was a whole different experience.
Were you dropped on your head repeatedly as a child to want to spend the night in a haunted building in the dead of winter?
Yeah, imagine the logistics of it. There were a lot of people who were like, Dakota, I don't think we should go there. It's like going to be impossible to access. And like, the pictures we were getting from the owner before we even were like showed up filming was, yep, every hallway has several inches of ice. And so it was really dangerous, really scary. And I'm so glad we did it, though. It was like a bucket list. We got to check that off the list, a place I've always wanted to go, and it was right in our hometown. It's awesome. Like, we got to kick off the season at our hometown in our house. Everyone flew into Minnesota, and we started filming right away, picking each other up at the airport and hanging out at our childhood house where we all used to hang out. And from there, we go to Nuphemming, our dream location.
And what about you, Chelsea? What was it like for you, aside from getting past the cold? First of all, I don't even know how in Minnesota winter you can keep together enough in the cold to investigate. That might have been the end of my investigative career. But, you know, once you're in there, what is it like, and how does that impact? Do you notice any difference in the way a haunting takes place now that there's maybe a higher level of static electricity because of the dry, crisp Minnesota air? What did you pick up from this?
Yeah, well, like, before we even went into the building, I was like really upset when I found out where we were going, because it was a place that the guys have always talked about growing up. So it was a place I wanted to go to, but not in the middle of a Minnesota winter. So that was kind of my mindset going into it. But on the other hand, I didn't know if I could even do it. I knew I was from Minnesota, played hockey, and have been in the cold my whole life, but this is like another animal. Like, I'm not kidding. I was really concerned, but when we actually went into the building, at first I realized that I was so bundled up that I was losing the ability to like sense like things physically, because I had so many layers on. So usually part of season one that was different was I just felt like I was just, you know, so exposed compared to being all bundled up for winter. But on the other hand, like, I just feel like so much more happened in the winter. Like, I feel like we just had so many experiences that, like, I feel like, Dakota, you even had to cut out a bunch of stuff, like,
yeah,
because it was just like so many things happened. And I don't know if that's seasonal, I don't know if that impacts it, but it was definitely more than I expected.
One thing about the winter that's like is time. The last season it was the summer, so we would be arriving at each location around 8 o'clock at night, spending the night till about 7:30, 8 in the morning. This time around, we were showing up around 5 o'clock at night, still spending the night until 7 or 8 o'clock in the morning. So we had an extra 2 to 3 hours this time around. So we had just more time in there too, to really experience these locations.
Because we wanted to make sure we got our arrival shot. Like, we wanted our arrival shot to be during like when it was still kind of light out. It wasn't that we like chose to do it extra 3 hours, but it was because of how we had to kind of time it. And I found out it was an extra 2 to 3 hours, I was about to cry, to be honest.
But you get in there, you're digging through this, I mean, did it give you almost this sense? I would guess it had to give you a sense of even more isolation and kind of that, what's the word I'm looking for? Claustrophobia. Because you are so bundled up, you're alone, it's so cold and everything. Did that add another dynamic to the investigation itself?
Yeah, I was so uncomfortable.
Yeah, me too. It was all about comfort. It was just so uncomfortable, so much more cold, less energy now. A lot of your energy is used to staying warm. And especially, you know, Pemming, because it's into the woods in Minnesota, it really, really felt secluded with, like, we couldn't even bring the RV up to the building. Usually we can drive the RV pretty close to a door and get out and unload.
Oh, no, Tim, they couldn't bring the RV up to the door. They had to walk.
Like, but that was, like, honestly really scary, not being able to even bring the RV up. We had to go last minute because we had met with someone earlier the day, and they had told us, like, you guys are not going to be able to get up there. We're like, what, really? They're like, no, like, they called last week, but it's not even really close. So we got, like, a four-wheel drive rental car, and that barely made it up, too. And that was freaky, knowing that if we can barely get up here, like, no one else can. Like, if you need help.
We had to shovel our way to get into the building, Dakota.
I know. Like, the front, like, pass. Oh, that was so creepy.
Can I also say something? Just so I feel like it deserves credit.
Right.
The porta potty was outside, like, 100 yards away. I'm not kidding. And it was terrible.
Well, at least you had a porta potty. When I was a boy, we just had to pee in a hole in the ground, and we liked it.
Oh, God. Yeah. Well, yeah, that's I will say that when people ask what's the worst part of investigating, it's in some of these old buildings you have to use a porta potty that's outside that smells like it hasn't been changed since the Revolutionary War. Those are brutal. So you've got obviously no pumping. What are a couple of the other locations we can look forward to in season two? And you did a 6-episode truncated season this year. Is that something you feel a little bit more comfortable with because you're able to really kind of give it to those 6 locations as opposed to spreading yourself thin, trying to stretch it out over 10 or 13 episodes?
I think 10 is like perfect for the summer when we have energy. But like when we did 10, by episode like 6 and 7, we were really getting tired. And I was like, okay. But this time around is like episode 3. It was like, oh my gosh, I'm tired as I was midway last time. I think if we're going to do another winter one ever, like 6 is perfect. It's enough. You can do it. It doesn't absolutely destroy you, but it comes close. When some of the locations, I mean, this is what gets me excited, is haunted locations and big abandoned creepy places. I already mentioned it once, but one that, other than No Pemming, I think the one I was most excited for was the Sheboygan Falls Asylum. That's in Wisconsin. It's another asylum. It's similar to No Pemming, where it's in Wisconsin. So I had heard of this place for a long time. Never once thought I would get allowed access. They weren't even allowing people really in. And we just got really lucky with timing. And we called the owner. The owner recently had let like a local paranormal Wisconsin group inside. And that group had all sorts of stories. And the owner was cool with us coming. And that to me was really exciting, being able to be like, oh, we're the first to go in here. And it was a challenge for us, too, because we're growing. We're learning as we go. We still have so much to learn and get better at. But this was one of our first true tests, where normally we have dozens of stories to go off. But this time around, we had just very few. And over half of that location was completely unexplored. The tunnel system underneath it had never been explored by anyone in the paranormal. And so that, to me, was like, oh, so exciting. This huge, massive asylum that's reportedly haunted in Wisconsin.
Yeah, I mean, it's amazing to find these places that are like literally your neighborhoods, your back door. You don't even realize that they exist until you start digging around and getting out there.
Mm-hmm.
Now,
totally.
I'm curious, you know, in what you've seen in the first, you know, 16 episodes that you've done, are there tweaks? Are there things that you see that you're like, you know what? When we come back for a season 3, we need to we need to change things. We need to bring in this aspect, or we need to take it past the boundaries of these four walls and go beneath the building or go outside the building and really kind of do something unprecedented. Do you ever feel that pressure? Because obviously being one of the creators and the driving force behind that show, it's got to be a lot of pressure for you as well.
Yeah, I mean, I think for me, the biggest pressure is just, like, I want, like you were saying, like, to me, it's really important that no one, even though we have a couple camera guys filming when we arrive, they film us getting out of the RV, unloading all of our gear inside. But at that point, that's always a very big thing for me. I want to be here alone. I don't want any, like, everyone leave, get out of here, far away. Like, this is, I don't want any noise containment, because if I hear something, I don't want to find out that it's some one of our security guys at the end of the driveway just watching the coffee room. I think that's really important to me. In terms of like experiments, I mean, honestly, I just always want everyone to be at their best. Like when we go in there, I want everyone to be open and honest about what they're feeling, even if it sounds crazy, what they're seeing, even if it sounds crazy. And that's all that matters to me. I think upping the ante is the only way I can really do that is by keep picking scary locations that I know are going to freak us out. And that's all I can do.
Yeah. One of the common goals that we had going into the next season, like you were saying, it's always important to really analyze like what we've done in the past and, you know, see how we can do things better, which I believe that we still have a lot of room for improvement. But one of the things that we really focused on this past six was, instead of, you know, running away from it and not getting any answers, whether any of the experiences that we have, to kind of come back to it and to try to face it or to, you know, get more out of that experience instead of just leaving the viewers and leaving that experience and moving on. We try to get better at that because I feel like that was really important too.
Very cool. You've got, you know, do you have aspirations aside from the ghosts and the demonic to investigate if someplace, you know, said, hey, this place is really haunted, but people have claimed to have alien abductions right in this area as well. Would that be something that would interest either one of you, or Bigfoot encounters, something that would take you past the element of what you're doing and maybe down a whole new rabbit hole?
Yeah, I think for me, the paranormal is something I was fascinated with. I think all of us, Chelsea, too, at a young age, we were very interested. So that's what makes this so fun, is we get to go to all these places that people, we get to hear the stories and then put them to the test. Here, that's such a fun thing. But if I had to pick one other thing, it would be aliens 1,000%. I might even be more into UFOs and aliens than I am the paranormal, honestly. Like, it's so fascinating to me, UFOs. So yeah, that's something that would very much catch my attention. I don't know if it would work 100% for destination fear, just because it might be harder for us to really get into that scared if we're just in like the woods where people have seen aliens. But like, I would love to film something down the line one day where it's just a whole special on UFOs.
Well, you've got the Brown Mountain Lights, right? Which nobody really understands the phenomena. Is it ghosts? Is it alien? Is it covert government operatives? You know, we don't know. I mean, that's something where, again, to me, I like to have the security of four walls and a roof around me when I do these investigations. I know that there's some locations that Hans Holzer investigated that are outdoors, and we've been talking about that. That aspect unnerves me more than anything, because it is such an unknown, right? The whole punitive of fleshies, animals, you know, we've seen in enough horror movies how roots are growing up out of bad places when you decide to run, right? You're going to trip, split your head open on a gravestone or something. That whole element adds a whole new dynamic of holy shit, right? For me to be into. So the outside element seems almost more terrifying to me than just being inside a building. Do you see, you know, because it's kind of the opposite of claustrophobia. It's so wide open and so big. That can really mess with you. And especially if you're not an avid outdoorsman like Tim and I.
no pen sanatorium is called, I think Apeming means Into the Woods Sanatorium. So we actually did do some outside, even though it was the dead of winter, we did do some outside woods exploration at the premiere episode at Apeming, and that was freaky. It really is creepy.
Very cool. Well, you've got, I mean, so much going for you and a great resume behind you of all the stuff that you've worked on and where you're going. Do you see yourself, do you have a limit? I mean, do you see this being something you want to continue on with 20 seasons in, like a Ghost Adventures, or is this something you see that, you know, I'd like to do this for 4 or 5 seasons and then maybe break the walls down in the way UFO experiments and experiences are documented? Yeah. Where do you see your future going with this, Dakota?
I mean, we'll see what happens, but I think for me, how I personally feel, I'll do Destination Fear as long as people want to watch Destination Fear. It's the perfect concept for me where I feel like I can, I don't have to, it's like perfect. I love it. I love the people I get to film with. So I'll do it as long as it people want to watch it. That's, I don't have any goals with it. I'm not trying to, like, Ghost Adventures is on season 21. I don't think anyone will ever get to that point ever again. They are they've nailed it. And it's definitely not my goal to like surpass anyone or anything. It's just, as long as people want to watch it, I'll do it. Once people are done watching Destination Fear and don't want it anymore, I don't know what I'll do. If I'll stick with paranormal, I really don't think so. I think I'll probably move on. I know my main passion is filmmaking. I edit, I direct, I write. Like, that's all I do every day. So I'll definitely continue with that. I think sometime down the line, it'd be awesome to do comedies again, maybe even a horror movie. That's where I see my future, hopefully, is I'll do Destination Fear, but once it's over, I would like to continue the filmmaking stuff.
What about you, Chelsea? I mean, this obviously is a divergence from your life and career path, but how long could you see yourself wanting to remain in this, even if Dakota, like he said, as long as the fans want to watch it, are you of that same mindset, or is this something you think, you know what, hey, I've been there, done that, after 3 or 4 seasons, guys, it's time to, you know, make Tim Dennis go out with you for a while?
Yeah, I mean, I've been asked this before, and to me, like, I am always a person who is open to trying to make things work, especially if I'm passionate about it. And as long as the opportunity is there, and like Dakota was saying, if people still want to watch it, I would love to continue to participate in it. I know I'm going to be faced with some big decisions in the future, because, you know, we're talking about like my career now as a doctor and those things. So there's things that need to be figured out and some decisions that need to be made. But I'm totally on board to continue to make Destination Fear as long as it's in demand.
Yeah. Well, that's excellent news. All right. You know, guys, we wish you a lot of success with the launch of the show again coming out this week, the 29th. People, again, Wednesday, April 29th, 10 p.m. Eastern and Pacific, 9 p.m. Central. Find it in your local listings and watch the show. What, if anything, can you tease as we head out? What can you tease this season, Dakota, that people will really get from the show that maybe they didn't see in the first 10 episodes that you did last year?
Yeah, I mean, this time around, one of us was so affected that we did go to the hospital. We had a hospital trip, and it wasn't being dramatic either. I mean, there was actually something genuinely wrong with one of us. And then this first episode, actually, no pending, we did capture something on camera that really freaked us out. It could be explainable. There could be some sort of a shift in the ground or something moving. It is a very, very decayed building. But we did, while one of us was in our sleeping arrangements, we did capture something moving while we were sleeping at Nopeming Sanatorium. And that's almost scarier because it's one of those things we didn't even realize we had captured till we got back home and started reviewing all the footage. And it's freaky. It's really freaky.
Do you see re-releasing episodes with footage that you couldn't show before? Is it hard? I mean, these are your babies, each one of these episodes. Is it hard to say goodbye to scenes that you feel are compelling? But, you know, that was the tough part for me on the Holzer Files. There are things that we capture, evidence that we show, that doesn't service the story we're telling. And it's mm-hmm. cool and it's compelling and it's terrifying. But what we're examining is, you know, we want to really kind of, you've got to keep the story on task and make mm-hmm. the best of what you've got with it. But there are so many different elements of the show that we felt brokenhearted that didn't make it. How often does that happen to you?
Every time, almost every day, I have issues with that. Well, I'm just like there are scenes I've had to cut completely that are like either funny, like I wish the audience could see that because it's so fun, but it just doesn't fit for what's going on right now. But the biggest is just like adding more to scenes. Like I only get a certain amount of time for every episode to show the actual overnight, and there's so many times where it's like, yeah, it's such a great experience. Like we captured something so cool and I just wish I could live with it longer. Like instead of it being a minute of us talking about what we just captured and experienced, I wish I could hold on it for two or three to really let the audience in our heads, what we're feeling at the moment. That's one thing I think if we get another season, it's going to change. I think more minutes will be dedicated to the overnight and less minutes will be dedicated to the buildup and the setup and the end of the show.
What do you think about extending a location over two episodes? Is that something?
I'd love to do that. I mean, I'm so game for that, especially if it was a location I was excited about, like Temming or Sheboygan Asylum, and something like that, where I'm like, okay, I'd love to do that. Even spending more than one night at a place would be cool. Like get a first day done, spend a night there, see how it goes, and then put it to the test for a round two the night after. There's so many ideas that I'd totally be down for that, though.
Excellent. Dakota, Chelsea, thank you both for stopping in and sharing some stories with us, some insights into the new season. We wish you continued success in wherever your futures take you. Thank you both for being here with us today.
Thank you, Dave. Thanks for having us.
It's always a pleasure. That's it for this week, kids. We'll be back again Tuesday with the best in true crime talk radio. Next week with even more of the best of paranormal talk radio. And we've got great shows lined up for you, folks. You're not going to want to miss. As a matter of fact, next week, we're going to talk about quantum science. And it's pretty fascinating. Dr. Carl Kalaman will be joining us as we delve into the world of alternate realities, mind-bending possibilities, and more. So make sure you tune in and check out the best in paranormal talk radio. I'm Dave Schrader. That's Tim Dennison. This is Darkness Radio.